And good morning to you, Tucson, and all of Southern Arizona. Welcome live here to the Common Workspace Studios Tipping Point with Zach Yenser on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. Welcome aboard, and happy Friday. Matt Neely, happy Friday to you, sir. You make the magic happen every single day here on the show. And we made it to the finish line, another week down.
We're getting there. It's a good thing, Zach. Got a little football this evening and I think some basketball too. So looking forward to a beautiful day today and some sports tonight.
Matt, we've been talking about, this is unscripted, but hey, this is what we do, live local radio. In a second, I'll tell you what's on my mind today.
There you go.
And we'll jump into it. But Matt, we've been talking a lot of football on this show. UVA basketball is looking good.
Well, you know, they're going to be playing Wichita State, and that's going to obviously change the level of competition for them. And but sure. So far, so good. You know, I like what I'm seeing so far.
They Michigan is up soon on the schedule, right? They haven't played Michigan yet, have they?
No, not yet.
Some people were saying that. I mean, I agree with Wichita State, which, you know, has been a top 10 team within the last few years. I don't know where they're ranked this year. But some say Michigan is the first true test. Maybe Wichita State is. I don't know. But this team looks like it's a lot of fun.
Absolutely. I think the weekend tournament, Wichita State is tonight, and then okay. It would be either versus Michigan or UNLV on Sunday.
Got it. We'll just say this, a much better start, but they had less of a hole to dig out of, and obviously still considered a top program around the country for recruits. And one of the things that I'm looking forward to with the coaching change is the international recruiting. That was always kind of the strength of this new coaching crew, was the ability to recruit international prospects. And I think we're seeing some of that, and I think we'll see more of it down the road. So sure. You mentioned it, Matt.
Absolutely.
You took me down a rabbit trail, but that's okay.
Yeah, a lot of good things happening in McHale, the men's and the women's team. Just
yes.
Boy, things are really looking bright. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, that Louisville win a few nights ago was good for the women's team, and yeah, lots of fun. Good stuff over there at McHale. Friday is our wrap-up day on the show. We will wrap up the wrap-up day with Jason Robinson of Mass Mutual. Financial Fridays, we do this a couple times a month where we talk in depth about a financial planning related topic, give you some insights to take away, and then of course make sure you have a connection to Jason if you want to continue the conversation. So that's how we're going to end the show. I want to talk about a couple of things. We take Friday to talk about either issues shaping the weekend ahead or things that we didn't get to this week. I want to talk about this story that came out last evening about the city of Tucson needing to replace 40% of its workforce. Now, I think there's a few things that were left out of this article that might be worth some clarification. So we'll get into that. But I want to talk about what I think is the bigger issue, the bigger challenge to be looked at. So interesting article, Bud Foster, KOLD, City of Tucson may need to replace 40% of its workforce. And then I want to talk about a big national item. Matt, this morning, after a bit of a filibuster last night, the House of Representatives voted by a very slim margin to pass a roughly $2 trillion spending package that would expand social benefits and fight climate change. That now goes to the Senate with hopes of a passage by Christmas. And the White House has, and this is just objective, friends, the White House has rarely met a deadline in this first 10 months. So I'm not counting on it, but it could happen. We'll see. There was a funny piece. I don't know if it was in WAPO or I forget, but this was a couple months ago of just advice to the president's team: stop setting deadlines. No one believes them anymore because you know the percentage of the country wasn't vaccinated by July. Setting the budget wasn't done. The infrastructure package wasn't done on time. There's been four or five, six times where timelines haven't been met. So don't set deadlines. Just do the work and then say it's done when it's done. But the passage of that made me think of a piece that I saw recently that really addresses how we manage issues and dollars in this country, I think is significantly broken. And certainly the path we are going on now in, with economic policy, without making some substantial changes in other areas, is not going to solve the problems that we're hoping to solve. So I'll speak about that as well. Give me a call, 520-790-2040. Until Jason at the end of the hour, it's you and me on the air. Let's do this thing we call live local radio together, real-time talk, real-time people, real issues in real time. We'd love to know what's on your mind. And if there's anything you want to comment on that we did this week, you didn't get a chance to, give me a call. Matt, before we go to a break, I rarely do this because I think it's just weird personal back padding. But a listener left a really nice remark, and I only bring it up because it truly is what I try to see as the brand of the show. Tucson radio host Zach Yenser is trying to approach the toughest and touchiest issues like a sober grown up, more light, less heat, no shortcuts. I might steal that. That might make a good paragraph on our KVOI website, Matt. Again, I don't do this often because I think it's just weird, but we really do try to have grown-up conversations talking about tough and touchy issues in a way that's more light, less heat. And Matt, appreciate your help along the way doing that. But I thought that was nice and a good way to end the week.
All right. Yeah, absolutely.
Let's do this because I want to dive into another topic and not have to take a break. Let's take a break just a few seconds early. Our first break here, Tipping Point with Zach Gins on AM 1030 KVY The Voice. When we come back, I want to talk about this story that came out again. I just teased it. City of Tucson may need to replace 40% of its workforce. I've got a couple issues with the write-up, but I want to talk about what I think is a bigger issue on this as well. Of course, get your thoughts. 520-790-2040. Join us on this beautiful Friday as we close out the week together. AM 1030 KVY The Voice. We'll be back.
Radio by and for the people of Tucson. 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
Why I Love Where I Live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Located in the open-air Mercado San Agustin Annex just west of downtown, it's a great place to shop or spend time with friends as you enjoy food, drink, and other shopping options close by. Find gifts, toys, books, and clothes that will help you celebrate where you live. Visit them at the Annex off the I-10 at Cushing and Avenida del Convento. Zach Yenser here. I'm so excited to be a part of the launch of the Little Love Burger this fall here in Tucson. Located just two doors down from the Rialto Theater, Little Love Burger serves up the juiciest scratch-made hamburgers, loaded hot dogs, hub ice cream milkshakes, lovable local brews, and the most addictive breakfast sandwiches. Starting October 20th, Little Love Burger is open Sunday to Wednesday, 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Thursday to Saturday, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook. Tucson, don't you want some burger to love?
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and scheduling time with Devin and her team.
You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento.
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
Helping you make better money decisions is what The Ramsey Show is all about. Today at 1 p.m. on 1030 The Voice.
And And we're back to Tucson and all of Southern Arizona here, live out of the Common Workspace Studios, Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. I am your host, Zach Yenser, on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. We're spending our Friday, as we often do, making sense of the week that was and the weekend ahead. We'll talk about the package passed this morning, nearly $2 trillion by the House, the social spending bill now heading to the Senate. We'll do that next segment. But there was an interesting piece I wanted to get into, and of course we'll take your phone calls, 520-790-2040. Join us here live on the air. This piece from KULD News, City of Tucson may need to replace 40% of its workforce. Now, there's a couple of things that I want to mention before sharing what I think is the bigger story of this. One of the lines in this article is, more than 800 workers are eligible to retire, 155 could be terminated because of their vaccination refusal, and another 610 positions are open right now. At its next meeting, the Tucson Mayor will discuss their strategy to fill positions which will be left open because of retirements, terminations, and those which just sit empty now. Altogether, it could be as much as 40% of its workforce. Now, look, I think a natural part of this, right, is the headline game is go to the extreme. I'm not making excuses, and I'll tell you why in a minute. This could be, maybe, might, you know, I think makes for a good headline. I don't know if it's as dramatic as 40%. Here's an example. There was a meeting that City Manager Michael Ortega was in yesterday where he said that only, I think it's 43 employees right now still have not gotten the vaccination. So that 155 number to me, haven't 100% fact checked it, but it's not what I was hearing yesterday. In other words, about 100 of that number have either gotten an exemption or have gotten the vaccine or whatever the case may be. So I think that number's not fully accurate. I don't doubt 610 positions are open. And yes, look, I don't, you know, will all 800 workers that are eligible to retire tomorrow? Likely not, right? That contributes to that 40% workforce number. Will they retire in the near future? I think 100% so. Look, we've seen some major retirements. We've seen some major, we've seen some folks leaving. I am hearing rumblings within certain departments that there is some major burnout happening, COVID and otherwise, of folks who I think are going to say, look, I planned a few months ago to continue doing this gig for 3 to 5 more years. I don't have to. I could retire. I'm going to retire. So I don't know that. I think there's some holes here. You know, whether it is in terms of the accuracy of numbers, also the probability and possibility of all these retirement eligibilities, I don't think we're going to see 40% of Tucson's workforce drop off in the next couple of months. But the Tucson Mayor and Council is going to discuss their strategy to fill positions which will be left open. Now, this is not me making any kind of excuses. And here's why. There's an interesting number that I am looking at and starting to track a little bit more. And I look at a couple of peer cities, and I think some peer cities, two of them that always stand out are Albuquerque and El Paso. Now, I want to look at Albuquerque for a minute. Albuquerque is, I think, a few thousand residents short of Tucson. El Paso has 559,000 residents as of 2019. The number in El Paso was 679. By the way, Denver is only 705. And of course, Tucson's right about that 550, 560 number. So looking at Albuquerque, this is a peer size community in terms of people who live there, are contributing to the tax base, are buying goods and services, are running businesses. It's a good number to look at. According to the City of Tucson's human resources page, there's about 5,000 FTEs that are or hired, folks hired, 5,000 employees, let's just say employees, hired by the City of Tucson. Now, we know that in the City of Albuquerque, from their HR page, that the City of Albuquerque hires about 5,800 employees. And my point on this is that we are looking at two communities that are similar, again, in population and in tax base, but there is a nearly 1,000 person gap between how many people Tucson hires and how many people Albuquerque hires. Now, look, I will look to bring more science and data behind this, right? Is Albuquerque, you know, is that 5,800 what they're budgeted for? Do they actually have that number? But I've heard from some qualified sources that the city of Tucson is anywhere between 1,000 to 2,000 full-time employees short of other peer communities, right? We're not talking Portland or Seattle. We're talking Albuquerque. We're talking El Paso. So again, you know, I think facts and data matter. I take potentially a little bit of issue with this KOLD article, but I think the bigger story is probably that 610 positions that are open right now. And the fact that even if we were to be fully staffed for what we could fill, I think we're still hundreds of positions short in the city of Tucson. And look, we talk a lot about public safety. We know we need more fire department employees. We know that we need more officers. I was talking to somebody yesterday, again, someone who's close on the ground, and there was a question of, does TPD have a gang violence unit? And the answer is no. We don't have a dedicated TPD unit focused on gang violence and gang crime. It's gone because our Tucson Police Department, because of staff shortages, is playing whack-a-mole to manage the most violent year in Tucson history. I've told you on this show before that folks tell me that there are police officers sitting in their cars taking 911 dispatch calls because there's not enough dispatchers to manage that and then send it to the vehicles. So you know, when it comes to TBD and TFD, like we know these things, we hear these things. But what doesn't get talked about as much are neighborhood services, planning and development, economic initiatives, housing and community development. I could go down the list and tell you the number of anecdotal stories of departments saying, we need more people, we need a lot more people. Now, each of those departments are, as I understand, a couple of those are, have been able to pitch an increased workforce in their departments and are getting more people. I don't think these are issues that aren't being looked at, but we are hundreds and thousands of staff short in the city of Tucson on a over $1 billion budget. And that affects service delivery. Right, again, whether it's calling 911 or just getting a permit for a house. I mean, I know personally it took me 3 months to get a permit from the city of Tucson. I had a trench open for 3 months. And I don't know if it's all city of Tucson. I think there was multiple partners in there. But we know that service delivery is slow and not always responsive. And I think this is a problem long term. And I've been saying this a lot out and about, and some of you have seen it or heard it on this show, is I think that we need to have a more intentional focus in this community on how we create more resources to bring more people on board to solve more problems, to make certain things faster and to make them more effective. Now, this article mentions, I think, what are some good things, and that is speed up hiring. Government takes too long to hire. It's not just pay raises, it's speeding up time to hire. Councilmember Steve Kozacik, in this article by Bud Foster, City of Tucson may need to replace 40% of its workforce, says, look, pay raises are not enough. I can tell you that when I talk to folks in Tucson Police Department, of course they needed, are thankful for, and it was the right thing to do, is to increase pay. But that was the tip of the iceberg. To me, that is not the major underlying issue. And I think there are many who think, we just pay police officers more and the problem will go away. The problem hasn't gone away because it's not about pay solely or even mostly. So I think here that we are, and I don't want to be dramatic. I don't do this to be dramatic. I think we're approaching a bit of a cliff where we are going to have a lot of retirements. Can we hire fast enough? Can we keep people enough? And can we grow the amount of staff that we hire? It's a two-pronged problem. And until we fix that, we're going to see services get slower and response get slower. And I hope to see, as a city of Tucson resident, I hope to see some urgency on this. I'm just sensing an incredible lack of urgency on some major cliffs that deserve urgency. By the way, I think we're going to see out of TFD and TPD, I think we're going to see retirements. I think we're going to see beyond this vaccination question. I think we're going to see the last year and a half and the toll it has taken on our public safety responders. I think we're going to see people say, I'm not going to put up with this anymore. And I'm fully vaxxed and I'm fully eligible to continue here, but I'm out. I think you're going to see it. You're starting to hear about it. And service delivery. Again, Albuquerque, a city of a similar size, is hiring hundreds of thousands more workers than the city of Tucson is. And if you feel a delay on your service delivery, it's because you're feeling a delay on your service delivery, right? And again, this is not on the good men and women at the city of Tucson who are trying to do their job, and I think by and large are passionate about it. And again, I think there's many voices trying to solve this. But this is the urgent question of the day. Right, we hire 7 people every 4 years to hire other people in city staff to focus on a few things really well, and this is one of them, is to make sure there's a fully staffed, funded department across the board to deliver service. And I don't think the numbers point to that happening. So again, I'll repeat one more time, we'll go to our break. I don't think that 155 number is accurate. I think the majority of workers, whatever department they are in, have gotten their vaccination and or have gotten an exemption. I don't doubt 610 positions are open right now. I do doubt that massive swaths of the 800 workers eligible to retire will retire tomorrow. I think it's going to be a consistent trickle, but we have to look at that number. But more broadly, even if we didn't have 800 retiring, even if we didn't have 50 to 150 eligible for termination, and even if we didn't have 610 positions still open to be filled, even if all those problems went away, I think, by the numbers, we're still hundreds of thousands short of where we need to be. And I think we got to be focused as citizens on asking for a government that works. That is the job. So my thoughts. You can give me a call, 520-790-2040. You can shoot me an email, zyenser@gmail.com. When we come back, I want to go national. The House just passed a spending bill. It now goes to the Senate. I want to give you a quick update on that. And then some broader thoughts on what I think is a hole in the Build Back Better plan and a hole in the Republican response to it. We'll be back. 10:30, The Voice at 9. Tipping Point returns. We'll be right back. In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's the nearly 60 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges currently under construction, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. What are the community stories that define us? Talking about these stories are what Tipping Point is about and what Storyteller PR, a public relations firm in Tucson, has been doing meaningfully for years in our community. Storyteller PR activates publicity, social media, and event production to establish and strengthen the reputation of Southern Arizona brands and organizations. What story do you need to tell? Visit us at StorytellerPR.com to learn more.
Zach Yenser here. I'm so excited to be a part of the launch of the Little Love Burger this fall here in Tucson, located just two doors down from the Rialto Theater. Little Love Burger serves up the juiciest scratch-made hamburgers, loaded hot dogs, Hub ice cream milkshakes, lovable local brews, and the most addictive breakfast sandwiches. Starting October 20th, Little Love Burger is open Sunday to Wednesday, 8 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Thursday to Saturday, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook. Tucson, don't you want some burger to love?
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
Life isn't about money, but how you handle money impacts everything. The Ramsey Show, today at 1 on 1030 The Voice.
And we're back to Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Good morning to you. Happy Friday. Welcome back live. You're out of the Common Workspace Studios, Tipping Point, with Zach Yenser on AM 1030 KVY, The Voice, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. We use Friday to kind of wrap up the week, look at the weekend ahead, try to check off the things that we didn't get to talk to this week, and you get to drive that conversation as well. What's on your mind? What should we be covering? What didn't we cover? Or what did we cover that you didn't like or you didn't agree with? All that makes for the best kind of radio. I encourage you to jump on as you have time and want to. 520-790-2040. We've got one more segment to do that because Jason Robinson will be with us Financial Friday. Get your finances right here with us on Tipping Point. Last segment, we talked about a local story. I gave you my thoughts of what was missing from the story, both small details and big details. City of Tucson may need to replace 40% of its workforce. I think the write-up is incomplete on that, but I think there's a bigger story, and I talked about it in the second segment right before the break. You can check everything out, of course, on our podcast, kvy.com/podcasts, or find Tipping Point with Zach Yenser on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play Music. This segment is sponsored by Little Love Burger. They opened downtown on October 20th, nearly a month ago. Little Love Burger will serve up the juiciest burgers, loaded hot dogs, Hub ice cream milkshakes, local brews, and breakfast sandwiches. You can follow them on social at Little Love Burger. And if you haven't visited them yet, you totally should. The few doors down from the Rialto Theater in downtown Tucson. So go ahead and check them out. Support a great team of men and women here from Tucson who are starting a business in our beautiful community that always deserves our support. And I thank you in advance for doing that. Little Love Burger. So I wanted to mention, by the way, real quick, I'm excited to finally have a sit-down conversation with Karen Taylor-Robeson, a candidate for governor for Arizona. We've been trying to set that up for a few months now. She'll be our Tuesday guest on the show next week, right ahead of Thanksgiving. So put that in your calendar. Karen Taylor-Robeson, her co-chairs of the campaign are former Governor Jan Brewer and former Governor Fife Simonton. And looking to establish herself in, I think, a bit of the establishment lane. Which is interesting. So I think her and Matt Salmon and Carrie Lake are probably the front runners right now, and I'm still trying to figure out where Kimberly Yee fits into that. But I think one of the top four candidates for governor on the Republican side will sit down for that conversation in a bit. Real quick here, House passes roughly $2 trillion spending package this morning that would expand social benefits and fight climate change. It was supposed to happen yesterday, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy did an informal filibuster, prevented it from passing yesterday, but it passed ultimately this morning. Again, it was bargained down in the House from the higher price tag earlier this year. It now goes to the Senate. And we know that Senator Manchin and Senator Sinema still have issues with even that price tag. And so the negotiation is not done yet, but it's a roughly $2 trillion bill addressing things like child care, addressing things like climate change, and so on and so forth. Of course, this on the heels of Monday's passage of the infrastructure bill. So that's the news part, and that happened right before we got on the air here, so it's worth mentioning. But there was a really great take in the New York Times that puts a more an expert, smarter opinion on something that I've been trying to wrestle through on the show. It's an opinion piece in the New York Times. Want more affordable housing and health care? Try this. Go ahead and check out that piece. It's really interesting. It's written by a moderate think tank called the Niskanen Center. I think I'm saying that right. Which he was, by the way, a Reagan advisor and a libertarian. Now this think tank would craft itself as more of a moderate think tank trying to pair market solutions with social safety net issues. But they wrote this piece, and it's interesting because they argue this. The Biden administration has rebranded its Build Back Better plan as part of a strategy to fight inflation. By subsidizing essential services like childcare, the argument goes American families and the broader economy will experience relief from the rapidly rising cost of living. Yet something doesn't add up. Consider that the current proposal would also dramatically shift the cost structure of childcare upward, with regulations mandating higher salaries, greater credentials, and compliance with federal quality standards. Having made childcare more expensive, it then proposes socializing over 90% of the cost for a subset of middle and lower income households. This won't reduce rising prices so much as mask them, and with informal child care providers, including religious organizations, at risk of being crowded out, the true availability of low-cost child care could even contract. These are their words. I don't know if I love this title, but this is what they call it. This is an extreme example of what we call cost disease socialism, addressing the increasing cost of supply-constrained goods and services by spreading the price among American taxpayers while leaving the cause of the underlying costs unaddressed. They then talk about an example from the campaign where Vice President Harris, now Vice President Harris, included a proposal in her campaign for president for what she called a renter's tax credit, a subsidy that, absent changes in the rules restricting housing supply, would simply bid up rental prices while enriching landlords. This piece also talks about, and then I'll leave this and I'll give you my opinion, for the few remaining advocates of fiscal austerity, simply sticking a finger in the dike of cost inflation is not a solution either. Solving the nation's long-term budget problems with cuts to popular entitlement programs would only make the average American's finances more precarious. If conservatives fail to come up with plausible strategies for genuine supply-side reforms, the bottom-up pressure for the expedient deficit-financed approach to cost control will become irrepressible. And look, what I appreciated about this piece was that it was not political. It actually ends with a call to action for both conservatives and liberals, for both Republicans and Democrats. Here is my broad concern overall, and this is a concern for me locally. And this is a concern for me nationally. And I think it includes things like rent control or renter tax credits. You look at housing. Both the right and the left, at even a local level, oppose an increasing supply to some degree of housing. And if it's some kind of an increase of a certain kind of supply, an increase in multifamily, is often opposed. I think we are at a point in America where we are not addressing the supply side appropriately. And the proposal of this article is to look at both the right and the left need to look at how do we pull back on regressive regulation. Now, not solely, right? And this is the urge to conservatives, is that the answer to this problem is not austerity. The answer to this problem is not just deregulation. The answer to this problem is not just cutting entitlements. We are past that point. It makes for good kind of Reagan-Bush era politics, but it is outdated. It is not going to be fully effective. We are in a different moment. We need different solutions. But this basically spreading the cost of the taxpayer upward really just protects interests while creating a supply crunch that raises prices. And I think we're seeing this around the country where the challenge is, look, the cost of services are going up, the cost of goods are going up, the cost of labor is going up. When you restrict supply, you are just band-aiding the problem by putting more money in people's pockets. You can put more money in people's pockets, but if you don't increase the supply of what they are purchasing, you have problems. Now, that is a very simple simplification of this really interesting piece in the New York Times. But we are, I fear, with Build Back Better, we are papering over the real problem. And now, by the way, I'm a fan of a child tax credit, right? I mean, and Mitt Romney on the Republican side has put this forward, right? This is not a partisan opposition to Build Back Better. I'm saying at its core systems analysis, the problems we face in America around cost and affordability don't come from the fact that we are not passing more government spending and government subsidy. I think it is a supply side problem. And I haven't been able to put words to it before. This piece did for me. And if you have a free 5 minutes this weekend, this might be an interesting piece to look at. If we are not looking at the regressive regulation and the regressive restrictions of supply where they exist, then we are merely papering over the problem. And we're papering over it whether we pass Build Back Better or we just go deregulation and entitlement cuts. We're papering over the problem. And I see it locally, where even with housing, we restrict supply and then wonder why only people who can afford $500,000 and $600,000 homes can buy a home right now in Tucson, Arizona. I think this is the core issue. And I don't know if Build Back Better, in fact, I know it doesn't. I don't think it solves that problem. And so I don't think we see our way out of this for quite a while. Just my analysis. When we come back from a break, Jason Robinson on the other side, we're going to talk financial planning with you. Get your finances right with us here on Tipping Point AM 1030 KVY The Voice. We'll be right back.
From Oro Valley to Vail and everywhere in between, 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
Why I Love Where I Live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Located in the open-air Mercado San Agustin Annex just west of downtown, it's a great place to shop or spend time with friends as you enjoy food, drink, and other shopping options close by. Find gifts, toys, books, and clothes that will help you celebrate where you live. Visit them at the Annex off the I-10 at Cushing and Avenida del Convento.
When looking at retirement planning, conventional thinking asks, how do I get a higher return? Should I take on more risk or is there a better product? Jason Robinson and his team at MassMutual focuses on the overall strategy first. He and his team of advisors have the tools necessary to measure the proper balance of investments and actuarial science for the best path possible for the highest retirement income. Call Jason and his team at 520-274-3749 to have them run through an analysis at no cost to see how much more efficient you can be, and tell them Zach sent you over.
In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's the nearly 60 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges currently under construction, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
After you finish listening to The Tipping Point, listen to my show, The Hugh Hewitt Show, this morning from 10 to noon, right here on 1030 KBOI The Voice.
And we're back, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Happy Friday to you. Wrapping up the week here on the program. And in studio with us now is Jason Robinson of MassMutual. We started talking about annuities a couple weeks ago, and we're going to do a part two on that. We want to give our listeners some things to work with on their own, and then, of course, create deeper conversation that hopefully involves more of a connection with you to get into the weeds on an individual level. But I appreciate that we talk about these kind of topics on the air, because who else is doing it? Jason Robinson.
There you go.
Right? Good morning.
I mean, geez, it was so exciting. We had to take a couple of weeks to process what we talked about 2 weeks ago, right? So we'll try and kind of go part two today.
Right.
So I figure what we do is kind of do a little recap for maybe those that appreciate that, or maybe want, it's like a tease to go back and listen to it. But, you know, what we talked about a couple weeks ago was the just the introduction of what an annuity is. We talked about how there was really kind of two types to start. One, that you make contributions to it, and then we start an income distribution kind of phase at a later date. And then the second one is we make more of a one-time contribution, and then we start getting income right away.
Right.
So we talked about that that first one where we kind of make contributions and we start it later. We talked about how there was different accumulation options, you know, whether or not it's a fixed rate, it's maybe an indexed rate, or maybe it's in the market, you know, is what we talked about. And then we last point from a couple weeks ago we talked about is fees. You know, so we talked about how there's one that has more of an upfront fee, and then we can make distributions along the way. Or there's one where we don't have an upfront fee, but we have this surrender period where if we choose to make some withdrawals, typically it's kind of like the first 7 years, there's a surrender charge to pull the money out, but there's no upfront costs. So that's kind of where we left it last week. So
got it. So Jason Robinson, Mass Mutual, where are we going today?
So we're going to talk about this second type one where we make the single contribution right away, and then we start getting the income right away. So we're going to call this thing an income annuity is for the sake of today's conversation. But the one way of thinking about this income annuity is kind of like a self-made pension, if you will. So, you know, pensions are guaranteed income for your entire life. It's kind of like a Social Security, or, you know, we don't see a lot of pensions, but there are some people that may still have one today, or grandpa has a pension, or they may hear of it. So what a pension is it's just someone has this guaranteed income for the rest of their life, no matter how long they live. Always have the exact same guaranteed amount. So what we're talking about is how if someone's got investments, they exchange those investments with an insurance company to create this guaranteed income, and that's what this annuity is, the tool that's used to create this guaranteed income.
Interesting.
Yep.
That demystifies it a little bit.
Hopefully we're trying to just kind of articulate the moving parts.
Right.
Whether or not it's suitable for you, that's right. You know, always going to be
that's
the key conversation.
That's the one-on-one conversation.
Absolutely. Yep. You know. Okay. So now there's a lot of income options right here. So want to highlight a couple of points to consider. So number one, when you make this exchange, right? So you exchange your investments into this annuity, you start getting this income. I want to make sure it's very clear. You give up control of the investments. So no longer worrying about investments going up or down. Maybe something, but it's really key to remember, you really don't have control over the investments. You're exchanging it, but in return, you get this guaranteed income.
Mm.
Number two, you no longer have access to the entire sum. I want to be very clear, you know. So this is an irrevocable decision, so it's very important that people really understand what's going on. But if you move this over, it's an exchange, but if an opportunity comes up or an emergency comes up, you can't go back to the insurance company and say, hey, can I get some money back because an emergency came up. They're going to say, sorry, we're giving you an income. That money's no longer really yours. Mm-hmm. The income is what's the exchange. The last thing to consider is that once what we call the annuitant, or the person that owns the money, once they exchange it over, the guaranteed income's for their life. But as soon as they pass away, the income does stop. So I want to make sure we talk about that. Now, there are some contracts that do have some other nuances, but these are really kind of the fundamentals of what I want to talk about today. But no matter how many payments were paid out or how long you've been getting that guaranteed payment, as soon as you pass away, those income stops.
Mm.
So I want to pause for a second.
Got it. Well, I'll take that pause to say, you know, we got plenty of time here in this final segment. 520-790-2040. We're happy to take calls and questions. And Jason, you're able to answer those as well as you're able in this format. If not, it can be an offline conversation. But
for sure.
Anyway, if you have a question or a thought, 520-790-2040, that's our live line number.
I know. Well, geez. I mean, this is super exciting, right? I'm sure your people in there are probably so like excited right now. They're like, oh man, we'll call this guy later. This stuff is interesting.
What is your number real quick?
Yeah, it's 520-274-3749 for sure, you know. So, all right. Well, let me do this. Let me address, how do we determine how to manage these concerns, right? So, okay, Jason, thanks. You brought up some good concerns, but how do we think through these things, or what should we consider to manage, you know, these concerns? So I want to address the first one, no investment control, right? So the idea, you exchange this over, you don't have any more investment control.
Right.
So the thing to think about is, are you risk adverse or are you opportunistic? I think that's the question maybe you ask yourself, because you may be considering kind of that. Another way to think about it is, maybe you've had the ups and downs, you've ridden them for all your life, and maybe you're at a point where you're kind of like, I'm over that. It can be nice to know that you never have to worry about that ever again, and you got this guaranteed income.
Right.
For some that are opportunistic, maybe what they do is they say, can I use the annuity to maybe guarantee essential expenses for the rest of my life, but not all of my money? So maybe I still keep some of it in control. So that might can help with some investment control. Then you can play around with it. So if you're a little more opportunistic, that might be a good solution. Liquidity. So the exchange, when we move the money over, we have no more liquidity. That is a very big red flag for myself, for regulators, underwriters that say we have to make sure it's suitable. So what I would say is, maybe consider not moving all of your assets into an annuity.
That's a good point.
We would say, hey, maybe what we do is, maybe we'll have a lower guaranteed income, but then we keep some money just in a savings account or available for that emergency, or I don't know, that trip that you want to take, or to maybe be opportunistic for some reason. So that may be a way to think about from the liquidity and the lack of being able to get some money. Last thing is the income stopping at death. So this is super risky. So traditionally, if they move the money over and it's all based on our life, it's possible that you could pass away the next day. I mean, super morbid to think about, but it's possible, right? Well, then you've spent your entire life building this money up. I'm talking about from a retirement standpoint. You put all this money, you exchange it over with this thought, hey, guaranteed income for the rest of my life, and then we end up terminally ill, we pass away. This is super risky. So what they've done is they do create some different, what they call survivorship options, or some period certain things. So what it does is it says, yes, you're going to exchange a lump sum over for the rest of your life. However, if you pass away, we will continue that same income to your surviving spouse for the rest of he or she's life. So it's one way to help offset that. You're going to get a little bit less income because you're pushing some risk onto the insurance company. But what you do is you get a little more peace of mind, knowing that I'll either get some of my principal back, or my income will continue to, you know, someone that is important.
Right. No, man, this is good advice. And I just have to say that you are one of the happiest people I know for thinking so much about people's passing away. And I know I'm a little funny about that, but it's interesting that there is so much around how we manage risk around something that, you know, our lifetimes, we don't know. We don't know what happens. And so how do we manage the best possible planning scenario around success for however long we are around, but also manage the risk of what happens if we're not?
Yeah. What's the saying that I always tell you, right? We insure against what can go wrong so we can invest in what can go.
Right. But I've never seen you not excited about any of these topics. And you bring a healthy optimism, but also risk assessment to all the conversations we've ever had personally.
Nice.
For any of our listeners who don't know, you're my guy. Our family uses you for financial planning, and we've never been disappointed. But you had a really cool story
visual that to help people kind of understand, like, you know, again, why should I do this? And so there was a study. I couldn't tell you where the study came from or where it was, but I heard this once where someone did a study of schools in urban areas versus rural areas. And what they were studying was how far kids walk away from the school during recess. And what they found was in more of the urban areas where there was a fence line, what they noticed was that there was a lot of children that would go all the way to the fence line. But when they went to the rural areas where they didn't have a fence around the school, they saw that the kids really kind of stayed closer to the school.
Really?
So the way I'm relating this to kind of finances is, when we get people into retirement, if we don't know exactly how much we can spend because we don't want to run out of money, we don't know how long we're going to live, I find that sometimes people don't spend as much as maybe they could because there's no fence.
Interesting.
So this annuity can kind of work as the fence.
I love it.
Where it says we can guarantee that you can spend this much money, go all the way to the fence.
I love it.
And next month you'll have that exact same income coming in. So one way to think about it.
So if you want to know where your fence line should be.
Or could be.
Could be. Call Jason Robinson. The number one more time.
520-274-3749.
I love it. And of course, you can listen back to this on the podcast as well if you want to catch it. Jason, thank you for doing this. I don't know if there's any other live local radio that goes into in this short period of time that much information. And we hope to start a conversation with our listeners. But obviously, yeah. That number is where the conversation continues. Jason Robinson, good to see you.
Yeah.
And Thanksgiving will have passed before we see you again,
at least here
on the program. So happy Thanksgiving to you.
Yeah, you too, you and your family.
Wishing everyone listening a great Thursday, and we'll see you again in a couple weeks.
That sounds great.
Jason Robinson, thank you as always. Mass Mutual, get your finances right. I love that picture. Find out where your fence line is. You'll probably live a better life than just not knowing at all. And Jason Robinson can help you set that. I love that picture. I'm going to probably use it every single show. We've been doing this for a couple of years. Why didn't you give me that one before, Jason? Come on, man.
I teach you everything you know, but not everything I know.
Oh, my goodness. All right, that does it for our show. Hugh Hewitt up next, Bill Buckmaster at noon. When we come back, Louis Christensen will be in with lots of maps. We'll talk about transportation and transportation corridors. We'll talk roads, multimodal, and more. We love talking transportation on this show. That's our Monday morning news hour. We'll be back then. Take care, Tucson. Stay safe out there. Have a great weekend. El Tour is this weekend, so map out where you're going to drive. Just keep everyone safe, including yourself. Take care, Tucson. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back on Monday.
This is Hugh Hewitt.